Hi, and welcome to Jolly's Spring 2018 podcast series. This is Heidi Hadley, the principal editor of the Journal of Language and Literacy Education, a peer-reviewed open access journal housed in the Department of Language and Literacy Education at the University of Georgia. Today, I will be speaking with David B. Wandera, who is an assistant professor of special education, language, and literacy at the College of New Jersey. This article was co-authored by Marcia Farr, professor emerita of language, literacy, and culture, and of English at the Ohio State University, and professor emerita of English and linguistics at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Their manuscript is titled Interrupting Cultural Deficiency, Illustrating Curricular Benefits of Plurilingualism in a Kenyan Classroom. David, thank you for joining me today. I look forward to hearing more about your work.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yes, no problem. First of all, what was the purpose of this study?
So we had two main purposes. The first one was mainly to make a contribution. So we are contributing to scholarship that affirms the resourcefulness of using non-sanctioned ways of speaking. We think that when teenagers speak outside of the classroom and the literacy practices and the language use that they have outside of the classroom tends to be relegated when they come into the classroom in favor of this more curricular sanctioned ways of speaking and language use. And so what we're saying is that the ways that they speak outside of the classroom also have a value and they have a richness that can be used for curricular goals. So that's number one. Number two is a question of exposure. We're saying that teachers in the West and researchers need to get exposed to examples of language use from places and spaces that are not Western-like. And we're looking at a space in Kenya in this manuscript. And what we're saying is that it is unsustainable to limit our scholarly engagement to context which we are not familiar with. We need to get out, look outside of Western spaces and understand how language is used elsewhere. So we're asking that our readers think about spaces that they're unfamiliar with and they ask themselves questions about how language is being used over there. We're writing about a multilingual, multi-ethnic, and a multicultural urban context in Nairobi, Kenya, where teenagers are using Sheng, an urban way of speaking. They're also using some heritage languages. They have informal Swahili and informal English, and they're supposed to be using standard Kenyan English. So it's a very interesting dynamic of language use in terms of context we want to expose our readers to.
You argue that educators need to go beyond honoring students' linguistic repertoires. What do you mean by that?
So in thinking about going beyond honoring students' linguistic repertoires, one of the things that we are thinking of is we're wary of empty lip service, just paying lip service and saying we're honoring students' linguistic repertoires. We need for educators to have a concrete infrastructure of support. And so the phrase in Sheng, mudomo bagi, which is basically a mouth that is like a bag full of things that have no real consequence, the hollowness of action. So we're saying that educators have got to be very concrete about students' linguistic repertoires. And we're talking about ethno-linguistically diverse students come with repertoires that are a rich resource for learning. And so you don't just respect, don't just say we honor or we recognize. I believe that this is a very similar impetus that drives research on culturally sustaining pedagogy with an emphasis on action. And so educators should create pathways for achieving curricular goals. And in this paper, we exemplify some of these. I'm going to give you just three quick ones. The first one is the class is student-centered, and this is not a big surprise, but that's a way of honoring students' linguistic repertoires, having a student-centered classroom. Another one is having a variety of activities that included something like embodied instruction, students as a resource, learning as a process, among other approaches. The third one, which I think is a really important one for our paper, is in-class and out-of-class literacies are not in tension. The taking up a diverse repertoire of communicative resources to enrich learning and disrupting this false dichotomy between in-class and out-of-class language resources, which informs the foundation of many monoglot education systems. So we're looking at educators really having concrete infrastructures of support in honoring students' linguistic repertoires and not just saying that we honor them and we respect them and we love how our students speak and we're multicultural. Go beyond that.
Yeah, I think that's a really important distinction between action and words. Can you tell me a little bit about the way that you set up and conducted this study? Who were your participants and what data did you collect?
the main project that we are looking at is what we call the Grade 9-5 Collaboration, a cross-age study that happened in Nairobi, Kenya. I was the teacher there some time back. So this paper is looking at archival data from the study that we're looking at. And we have two groups of students who are engaged in cross-age peer-to-peer learning and peer-tutor peer learning roles. The data that we have here is mainly transcriptions of audio-recorded student interactions and descriptions of context in the form of field notes, and we have excerpts from informal follow-up interviews. So we are looking for data from among students, when we recorded students as they were speaking in class, engaging with one another over a full term, academic term. We were looking for data which showed instances of multiple language use. Basically, these students have a repertoire of languages. They don't just speak one language. They're not monolingual. They speak their heritage language, which is like Kisii, Kikuyu, Maasai, Kamba, and other languages. They also speak Swahili, which is the national language, and they speak English, which is the official language. So the students are robustly multilingual, and they use these languages in their communication. There's a concept we're using which we call plurilingual language use, which we explain in the paper. So we're looking at data that show or evidence of this kind of robust language use. We're also looking at data that show many students speaking, because plurilingualism is not just a feature of, let's say, one or two students in the classroom, but it is widely sort of practiced in a space like the Kenyan space in the classroom that we're looking at. So our data needed to have many students speaking with one another so that we could demonstrate that this is shared language use by a lot of students. We ended up with 4 episodes for this paper, but in the wider data corpus, we have many more instantiations of language use. We're basically looking at students using diverse linguistic repertoires for a variety of reasons, and the paper shows some of these: making prepositions, composing, asking questions, contesting and expressing opinion, acts of solidarity, and things like that. We themed this, we coded, we categorized, and then we ended up with the kind of data that we have, which we analyze.
What findings did you find significant from your study?
I'll very quickly highlight 4 findings. So we are looking at findings that confirm or affirm pre-existing or previous research, and we're also looking at findings that kind of try to stretch the field a little bit more. So I'll get to that. So the first finding I wanted to just highlight is our study finds, alongside with many other studies, that there are benefits to be accrued from culturally cognizant pedagogical approaches. Right? And one example that we hold up is learner participation. A lot of students in the paper that we have here participate in the classroom verbally, and they do this because they're able to use to tap into their diverse linguistic resources. So that's number one. We also find that for ethno-linguistically diverse students, plurilingualism can be a site for exploratory co-construction of meaning. I want to push this idea further when I'm thinking about it, to think about the creating of self through identity poses, creating of meaning through collaborative meaning making, and to basically show that students are able to arrive at different ways of creating meaning and pushing back and taking each other's meaning, making propositions and so on. And so if they can tap into their multiple language use and repertoires, those are resources that allow them to express themselves more fluidly and to be able to attain meaning-making. The third one is, as students take up various roles in the classroom, plurilingual resources can become a generative site for enacting intentionality. The students were able to negotiate their roles and were able to employ their diverse linguistic resources and position themselves variously in the joint literacy project. And we see that through the resources that are available in the plurilingual resources, they were able to enact themselves in robust ways. They're able to express themselves, they're able to ask questions, to regulate one another, and to really take up the role. The older students were able to take up the role of tutors. The younger students were able to take up the role of tutees. And together, they're able to take up the role of co-constructors of meaning in very robust ways. The paper has got more specific examples. So I'm just being very brief here. The last one I wanted to talk about is, oftentimes educators in the West are exposed to literature which positions ethnolinguistically diverse students as lagging behind. They need to catch up with monolingual English classmates and things like that. Now, our paper is finding that when we examine oral discourse by ethnolinguistically diverse students who can tap into their plural linguistic resources, we call this plurilingualism, when they can tap into this, through these kinds of examination, are able to spotlight the student's existing competence, that being ethnolinguistically diverse or being plurilingual in your language use is not a deficit, it is a resource, it is a competence, and this paper showcases that competence.
So finally, what are the most important implications of your research for both educators and for researchers?
That's a great question, Heidi. This takes me back to where I started, which is like, what were our two main purposes? Contributing to scholarship that affirms the resourcefulness of non-sanctioned ways of speaking and exposing educators and teachers to non-Western examples of language use. So those were the purposes. In thinking about that, there are two implications that seem to emerge for me. One of those is for educators, culturally inclusive pedagogies which tap into the resourcefulness of plurilingual language use can be beneficial to the learning process. Now here we are confirming what various researchers have said. But what we're trying to do is we're showcasing how this richness of students' language use looks like in an atypical space. The Kenyan space is not typically available or found in scholarship on language use that is Western-centric. And so we are saying that if we diversify that and we show how it works elsewhere, we can actually confirm what various scholars are finding. So for educators, the implication is to get that affirmation that culturally inclusive pedagogies that tap into this resourcefulness of students' repertoires of communication, diverse repertoires, those pedagogies are useful, and educators can continue thinking about innovative ways of being culturally cognizant. The second one, which is for researchers now, we are saying that how do we as researchers achieve a comprehensive and more accurate understanding of language use in contexts which are not typically presented in Western scholarship? There's a diversity deficiency in Western-centric scholarship, which is limiting how well we as researchers understand language use. We cannot say that we are trying to understand language use and we are not including examples from various places. The predominating examples in our scholarship come from the Western spaces or from Western-like spaces. So the implication here for researchers is, first of all, to name this diversity deficiency and to contest it and to say that it exists and it's not preferable, and to move beyond that and to engage with non-Western spaces of language where language is being used in various ways and to showcase those and to use that to enrich our data corpus. I see researchers working collectively, and so I think of myself as being part of a team of people who want to understand language use. And so in order to enrich our collective corpus of data, we need to not just look at what is familiar to us. We have to look at the non-familiar context of language use. And I think that's a big implication for scholars and for researchers, especially that we live in a very diverse world where we cannot ignore how other people speak and use language.
David, thank you so much for speaking with me today. Listeners, to read this manuscript, check out Jolly's spring issue to be published later this month.